Good evening. My name is Melissa Lafferty, and I'm a student project manager at the Clark Forum for Contemporary Issues. I would like to thank all of you for attending this evening's discussion, Local Air Quality, Past, Present, and Future. The vast network of highways that cross through the Cumberland Valley make it a crossroads of commerce. But the trucks that power this commerce also pollute the air. A recent study by the American Lung Association indicated that the Harrisburg-Carlisle-Lebanon area has the 24th most polluted air in the nation, a factor that affects health and quality of life. This pollution, specifically soot, and the health problems it causes, has driven Carlisle citizens to form the Clean Air Board, an initiative that seeks to raise public awareness of air quality issues, advocate policy and practices for clean air, and monitor air quality in the region. Today we welcome Dr. Philip Carey, Thomas Au, Colonel Paul J. Cunningham, Jesse Keene, Omar Shoot, and Rusty Shunk. Dr. Philip Carey is the pulmonary specialist in Carlisle. Thomas Au, an environmental attorney, has counseled several citizens groups, including the Pennsylvania Sierra Club and the Clean Air Board. He previously worked for the Department of Environmental Protection. Colonel Paul J. Cunningham served as the National Guard advisor to the Commandant at the Army War College and was an instructor in strategic leadership. He now is active in local issues concerning air quality, development, and responsible government. Jesse Keene is Vice President of Keene Transport Incorporated, the largest hauler and logistics distributor of construction equipment in the United States. Omar Shoot is the Interim Executive Director of the Cumberland County Economic Development Corporation and works with the Cumberland County Industrial Development Authority and the Area Chambers of Commerce. Rusty Shunk, who will serve as moderator, is Executive Vice President of College and Community Development at Dickinson College. I would like to remind you all that at the conclusion of tonight's event, a student-led discussion will take place here in ATS. All are welcome to stay to continue the conversation. Before we begin, I would like to ask that the sound be disabled on any cell phones and pagers. Participation is encouraged, but please hold your questions until the end of the presentation, when there will be a short question and answer session. Because today's event is being recorded, and out of courtesy towards those who may be hearing impaired, please raise your hand to alert us and wait for a microphone to reach you before speaking. And now, please welcome Rusty Shunk.
Thank you very much and good evening. It was the 1950s, a decade often thought of as peaceful, maybe even tranquil, except for Korea and Senator Joe McCarthy. And as a kid, I would walk out of my house on the west side and see a coat of reddish dust on the cars in our neighborhood, miles from the blast furnaces and slag dumps of the steel mills in a place called Bethlehem, where at one time over half the adults worked for Big Steel. You could see, you could touch, you could even taste the red soot if you wanted to, and we all inhaled it. No one called it particulate matter then. No one had heard the words carbon footprint then, and it seemed few people cared. Today we can't see, touch, or taste 2.5 particulate matter, but we do inhale it just the same. Many of you here tonight are familiar with the media attention regarding air quality in the Harrisburg, Carlisle, Lebanon metropolitan statistical area. I don't know how you couldn't. These are just a few of the clippings. The Clark Center has my really thick file. And you are aware of the work done by the Central Pennsylvania Clean Air Board, our local governments, the report of the Carlisle Area Health and Wellness Foundation, and air monitoring by the Department of Environmental Protection. Tonight we're going to explore the quality of air in the Cumberland Valley, what's been done about it, and what can be done. The Clark Forum students and staff have framed our discussion very well, and it's my pleasure to also welcome our five panelists here tonight. All people who have given hours of their time professionally or personally or both to improve the health and quality of life for all of us. In addition to the cell phone courtesy that Missy Lafferty just mentioned, I would ask that we adhere to two rules. First, the panelists have been given up to 10 minutes each to present. In fairness to us all, I will enforce that limit because we want time for questions. The second rule relates to the Q&A period afterward. I would ask that the members of the audience pose a query as opposed to deliver a speech. Those are the only two rules. We'll also have some microphone logistics to share at that time. And now to our speakers, the first of whom is Dr. Philip Carey, local specialist in pulmonology. Dr. Carey.
I'm very honored to be here tonight. Thank you for inviting me. Particulate matter is one of the primary air pollutants that is regulated by the Clean Air Act. It is commonly called PM2.5. In 2005, the EPA designated the Cumberland County as a non-attainment area for particulate pollution. This means that the three-year average of PM2.5 is greater than EPA's acceptable limit of 15 micrograms per millimeter cubed. The EPA also has a 24-hour peak standard, which was 65 micrograms per millimeter cubed. 6 months ago, the EPA lowered the peak level to 35 micrograms per millimeter cubed, and scientists now are recommending that they lower the annual limit to 12, which is the current standard in California. In 2005, the American Lung Association, as we previously heard, ranked the Harrisburg-Carlisle-Lebanon area, called the Harrisburg Metropolitan Area, as the 24th worst polluted area in the United States. Carlisle ranks in the 96th percentile. That means that Carlisle's air quality is worse than 96% of metropolitan areas in the United States, or another way to look at it is only 4% of the metropolitan areas in the United States have air quality that is worse than ours. The air we breathe is not clean. One important source of particulate matter in our county is diesel exhaust. Diesel exhaust is one of the most toxic substances known to man. What is diesel exhaust and why is it so toxic? Well, diesel exhaust is a compound mixture of over 450 substances. It is composed of a gaseous phase, which contains carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, and volatile hydrocarbons. In addition, its solid phase has elemental carbon at its core. Elemental carbon is also called soot. Carbon is a very reactive substance and readily binds a variety of substances, such as organic hydrocarbons, benzene and formaldehyde, both known carcinogens. It also binds sulfates and nitrates, which add to the acidic pH of the compound. Transition metals such as lead and mercury, and toxins such as arsenic and cyanide. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want any of my kids breathing any of these substances or any of the other. I'm going the wrong way. There. 40 known toxic substances contained in diesel exhaust. Does anybody know what dioxin is? Dioxin is Agent Orange, the herbicide used in Vietnam. Now, I want to emphasize, the size of the particles. These particles of particulate matter are 2.5 microns in size, which is about 1/20th the diameter of a human hair. When they are inhaled, its small particle size allows the particulate matter to penetrate deeply into the lung where it causes inflammation and disease. So it is particle size, chemical composition, and its affinity for toxic substances that make particulate matter so harmful. A relationship between air pollution and human illness has been known for over 50 years. The scientific evidence that particulate matter is harmful is overwhelming. The inhalation of particulate matter can cause exacerbations of lung disease, such as asthma or emphysema, and can precipitate lung infections, such as pneumonia and bronchitis. In January of 2005, the American Asthma Foundation designated the Harrisburg metropolitan area as the fifth worst environment for asthmatics to be in. Not the fifth worst in Pennsylvania, the fifth worst in the entire United States. In addition, particulate matter can also cause a variety of cardiac diseases such as myocardial infarction, heart attack, congestive heart failure, or cardiac arrhythmias. This data from the Clean Air Task Force gives us some idea of the health impacts on the national, state, and county level. It's interesting that particulate matter causes 21,000 premature deaths each year in the United States. The five-year war on terror has a mortality rate of 6,000 people, including those at the World Trade Center disaster. Americans are rightfully concerned about these mortalities, but seem oblivious to the 21,000 people that die each year because of air pollution. Based on information like this, Pennsylvania is ranked as the third most negatively impacted state in our country. Now, in addition to these cardiopulmonary effects, diesel exhaust also contains at least three substances known to cause lung cancer. Lung cancer is becoming an epidemic in our country, and the deaths from lung cancer now exceed the combined deaths from prostate cancer, breast cancer, and colon cancer combined. The cancer risk from exposure to diesel exhaust is 350 cases per million lives, significantly greater than EPA's acceptable limit of 1 to 2 cancers per million lives. In the Harrisburg metropolitan area, this risk is actually 412 cases per million lives. The risk of all other air toxics combined in the Harrisburg metropolitan area is 37 lives per million lives. In other words, the cancer risk from diesel exhaust is almost 10 times greater than all other air toxics combined. Children are especially vulnerable to the effects of diesel pollution. The lungs of children are immature, and they continue development until the age of 18. Exposure to diesel exhaust during childhood can lead to developmental lung defects. These developmental defects are permanent and will plague the children for the rest of their lives. Our children deserve the opportunity to have a healthy future. I believe that diesel pollution is having a negative effect on the health consequences in our county today, right now. Diesel pollution is not the product of my imagination. It is real. Diesel pollution, in the words of Al Gore, is our forgot what his words were.
Problem.
Problem. I would urge that the people of Carlisle, it is imperative that we shoulder the responsibility and risk that are necessary to meet this environmental crisis before it is too late. During the Civil War, the surgeons and doctors believed that human illness was caused by substances in the air. This bad air was called miasma. During the 20th century, when there were advances in microbiology and antibiotics were discovered, these theories of medicine were often ridiculed. 140 years later, the community of Carlisle now faces the harmful effects of air pollution. Perhaps these earlier theories were not so wrong after all, or maybe they were just a little bit ahead of their time. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Dr. Carey. Our next speaker will be Jesse Keene, Vice President of Keene Transport.
That thing is really sensitive. Okay.
Hit the back button. Go up all the way up to the left and hit the back button.
Sorry.
Let's go to the right.
We're having a tech moment. That's okay. It's not being taken from your 10 minutes, Jesse.
I'm Jesse Keene, Vice President Keene Transport, and on behalf of my company and our employees that live and work in the Cumberland Valley, I thank you for having me here. And Rusty and Missy, thanks for the introduction. I've been concerned about idle and wasteful fuel, but as well as all the things Dr. Carey's talking about, for several years, but about a year ago, a little over that, I got really interested when the Clean Air Board of Carlisle came and asked for advice and wanted to hear our side of the story of the trucking industry. Unfortunately for the people who live here, trucks are a necessary evil. America moves by truck and, you know, there's no way a railroad car can bring your food to the commissary here for the cooks to prepare it for your students. It just doesn't happen. So I believe we have to find a way to solve problems by working together. The trucking industry as a whole has made serious, great strides since 1994 by improving the amount of emissions that are put out the exhaust system of a truck. And what you see here is this is nitrous oxide, and you can see how it has continued to go down all the way with government mandates being very strong in 2004, 2007, but the greatest impact will be in 2010. This is EPA emission standards for heavy duty trucks, and it shows basically the same thing, but it shows nitrous oxide and it shows particulate matter, which Dr. Carey talked about. The government has mandated clean burning diesel engines. The big strides were made in 2004. And in 2007, January this year, was a huge impact in reduction in particulate matter. Not to the levels Dr. Carey might like that yet, but we're working there, working towards that. this is being done by different electronic fuel injection systems, particulate filters on the trucks, and so on. And this does come with a cost. An engine and a truck we bought in December of 2006 That same truck with the new emission standards in cost $10,000 more in January of 2007. So these things do come with a cost. The trucking industry accepts that cost. It's something we have to do to meet government standards, something we should do to be good stewards and also to burn less fuel. About a year ago, myself, along with the cab board, got a lot of trucking companies and warehouse people together and asked them to join on to an anti-idling resolution for Cumberland County. And we basically asked them, I'm not going to read all this because I don't think we have time, but we basically asked them to educate their drivers and their owner-operators, post no unauthorized idling signs within their facility, inform drivers that they cannot idle their trucks while they're waiting to load or unload, and just, you know, enforce this within your own warehouse, within your own trucking company, when trucks are delivering to your store, that type of thing. And we got good buy-in from the trucking and warehousing industry on a local level to this. Many people signed on to this resolution, including people like Giant Foods up here. It has a large distribution center. Most of the local trucking companies signed on, local even being the large ones like Roadway and ABF and Old Dominion, all those taking a role of stewardship within the community. Some of them already had anti-idling policies. This is what we need to do. We need to educate. This comes out of our driver training program, and we talk to drivers about engine idle time. Fuel is money. They probably understand that more than the impact on environment, so we talk about money. Fuel savings begin when idling ends. When you are out of the truck, shut it off. We tell them, you take your car to a restaurant, and you and your wife go in and eat Sunday dinner, you don't let your car run, so don't let my truck run. There's no point in it, no reason for it. If idle time is reduced, it also saves on wear and tear in the engine, less engine oil, less oil change intervals if you do it by the hours the engine's running. Let's not be wasteful. Here's another slide we used, no truck idling area. And what we're showing them here is a fuel gauge using $3 a gallon, which wasn't long ago, and showing them that at 300 gallons, you're soon spending $900. If we fill a truck up when it was $3 a gallon, it costs us $900 to fill that truck up. So we talked to them about shutting their truck off. There's very few reasons why they need to run their truck. This is probably a good time to tell you that today, sleeper trucks, I'm not talking the truck without a sleeper that delivers to the food store. He has basically no reason to idle his truck. A sleeper truck, if it is below 40 degrees or somewhere above 80 degrees, and the driver is on a rest period and sleeping in that truck, he does have some need to stay warm or cool. The other thing a lot of people don't realize, truck driver has a security issue. He can't roll the windows down and go to sleep because chances are he's probably going to get robbed or broken into. So drivers do deal with a security issue when they're sleeping in their trucks, the same as you would in a rest area. You're not going to sleep there and let all your windows wide open. Again, driver education, monitoring are the things trucking companies can do. Trucking companies need to set clear guidelines, make information readily available. Monitor idle time. Give the drivers regular feedback on if they're idling too much, why. Educate them how they can cut back on idle time. Provide technology to make idle goals attainable and take action if the goals aren't met. We set goals within our company to reduce idle time, and we have ways of getting the driver's attention through money and so on if they don't meet those goals. Idleware, you've heard a lot about Idleware. Our company does believe in Idleair. We use it nationwide. We've been wherever it's available. We know it's cheaper to hook up to Idleair on a per hour basis as our trucks run. Plus, we don't have the wear and tear in the engine when our trucks run. So we as a company do pay by the hour with a charge card to Idleair for our trucks to hook up. And we believe in it so much that I just happened on this day in our driver recruiter's office, but basically says it's trying to recruit drivers, and he's holding a sign up that says, Keene provides and pays for Idleair. And we're using that as incentive to work for us over somebody else who doesn't have that. More clean air efforts at Keene. We operate current model trucks, newer engines, which meet these newer standards. We do run a biodiesel blend, and we're in the process of testing and installing alternative power units. That's what APU stands for. Here's a picture of an alternative power unit. Basically, I use the term we need it to run a hotel room. We need it to provide heat and cool, maybe run a small refrigerator, a TV, or a laptop computer when the driver's on his rest period. These cost anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000, so they are very expensive to run. They do burn about one-tenth of a gallon versus a truck burning a gallon an hour. So they are effective. This is just some trucks we have. We set idle goals. We track them on a daily basis in all our trucks through a satellite communication system. So we do set these goals and we monitor that our drivers follow the guidelines. We also post no idling signs in our facilities to remind drivers they need to shut their trucks off where there are trucks or somebody else's. And we offer these, this is one of the things we offered to other trucking companies during the seminar and so on. But we're basically saying when you're not in your truck, shut it off. And that's all I have. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it very much. I'll answer any questions.
This is not all about the good guys and the bad guys. Thank you, Keene Transport. Paul Cunningham.
You left me with the job here of getting out of this.
I knew you'd take care of me, Paul. Can't see without my glasses.
Let me see if I can bring this up just a little bit. One of my favorite comics is Peanuts and Charlie Brown. And if you just take a minute to look at this. I show that for a couple of reasons. One, a lot of my friends ask me, Paul, how's the warehouse problem going out in Dickinson Township? And I usually have a tendency to say to them, look, really, don't ask me. It's been such a contentious issue that I feel like Charlie Brown sometimes, wrapped up in a kite inside a bush. Nevertheless, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here on behalf of Chuck Breslin from the Clean Air Board, who is marrying off his sister down in Savannah, Georgia, and he asked me to step in for him, which I was more than glad to do. I'm Paul Cunningham, and I'm a member of the Concerned Citizens Group of Dickinson Township. And we are a grassroots citizens action group organized to promote responsible development and governance in our township, which is Dickinson. We're currently leading an effort to oppose a mega or monster warehouse proposed on the Sparks Farm along Walnut Bottom Road, which I will show you later. I want to be clear from the outset that, much like Mr. Keene talked about, I'm not opposed to warehousing and the trucking industry because I realize that we need a place to store our goods and services and you need trucks to bring them to you. But I do believe that the evidence will suggest tonight that we have our fair share of warehousing in this particular community and clearly, as Dr. Carey indicated, outweighs the benefits and threatens our health, your health, our welfare, and the safety of our community. This is a slide from a group I belong to, a course I'm taking over the internet and through telecons over the next several months. Even at age 57, you have to go back to school. And this has to do with organizational metamorphosis and the ability to figure out how to get organizations and communities to change. Here's where I believe we are at the fork in the road. And I first came to this community in 1994 as a young student at the Army War College and simply fell in love with this small town America called Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And then I believed that the well-being of the community was, at that particular time, pretty good, although I was somewhat naive making that assumption, and I'll get to that point here in a minute. And over the past 12 years, there's been a decline in air quality, as Dr. Carey had indicated. There's been a rise in traffic and its congestion. I have neighbors in my community that will not go on I-81, just simply refuse to do that. And crime, and some of you have been following the newspapers over the last few years when Judge Ebert was the district attorney. He talked about the crime in the Miracle Mile and all those things associated with the warehousing and trucking industry, whether it be prostitution or drugs or felonies. And currently, the areas surrounding these warehouse communities, their property values plummet. And there's a decline. And I think ultimately there's a loss in small town America. We're going to lose this, and it'll turn into a tumbleweed town if we don't do something about it, especially as it affects our health. Now, so which way do we go? I'm always a believer in that great American poet, Robert Frost, who said that we would take the unbeaten path and the road not taken, and that would make all the difference. So this is going to require a lot of courage on all of our parts to do something about this particular problem. Dr. Carey talked about this, so I'll quickly go through that slide. We are the 24th in the nation in terms of this most polluted in the short-term particulate, 2.5. Now, this here is from the county's comprehensive plan in Cumberland County as the five most worst trends. And certainly we completely agree with the county's comprehensive plan that it recognizes these five worst trends. And I talked about some of them. I mean, suburban sprawl is not necessarily new to the United States. If you go from Boston to Miami, it's one suburban sprawl. But we do have excessive warehouses in development in our community. And this idea of a loss of sense of community certainly concerns me. If you look at this particular chart here, this slide depicts the concentration of warehouses in both Cumberland and Franklin counties. Now, the goods movement industry has targeted this valley because they can reach upwards of 60% of the population of the United States and Canada within a single day's drive or more. In fact, 12% of our domestic product passes through this valley on a daily basis. The industry representatives have indicated that they intend to warehouse from Carlisle to Chambersburg, if allowed. And this study was released in April of last year. And since then, you can add an additional four circles around a cluster of warehousing in Carlisle and 3 million more square feet of warehousing if is approved at the intersections of I-81 and Route 233. The average warehouse in Carlisle, for example, now exceeds 500,000 square feet, and the Sparks Farm, the one that I've been opposing, will exceed 1.4 million square feet on 106 acres of ground. And there's another project called the Royer Farm Project, which is already underway, and that's about 1.2 million square feet. This particular chart depicts the current and projected truck traffic along I-81 corridor, and you can see up on the left-hand side there, that's in the thousands, so that's 60,000 trucks, tractor-trailer travel from I-81 from Chambersburg to Susquehanna River daily. And note the projected growth in the next 20 years, so it'll almost double. Today at the Plainfield exit, for example, that ratio prior to when I-81 was designed, it was envisioned that for every 100 vehicles traveling on the road, only 15 would be diesel tractor trailers. And now down at the Plainfield exit, that ratio is now one of every three vehicles is a diesel truck. Some have argued that this slide reflects the fact that 90% of the traffic is only through traffic, and that should have no effect on our community. However, we all know intuitively that The truckers stop for fuels, meal, and utilize Carlisle for their mandated 10-hour rest period, and we do not have anti-idling laws. Now, every picture tells a thousand stories, I guess is the statement here. This is an overhead view of Exit 44 in Plainfield in Carlisle, our community. The five municipalities border that particular community. You can note the proximity to our regional hospital, which is brand new. There is an additional 10 million square feet approved for construction in this area that we can do nothing about. So that will be at 20 million square feet of warehousing. The concerned citizens of Dickinson Township completed air quality testing last year at the Carlisle Hospital at Exit 44 and found that the current conditions exceed federal air quality standards by a factor of 2. And of course, this data was aided the EPA and the DEP in their decision to locate a monitor near the vicinity of Carlisle. And you can see here Dickinson Township up in your, or the college is really along Walnut Bottom Road and High Street as you go out. So it's not very far from where we are right now. This particular slide, and I'll quickly go through this, depicts the warehouse growth again in Plainfield. And only 50% of the approved warehouse projects are completed. Current approved projects will double the amount of warehousing within a mile of Carlisle. The study authors have projected that a minimum of 4,200 truck trips will be generated by the warehouse at Exit 44. So if you live in that area, look out. A conservative estimate is that 5,500 daily truck trips will be generated west of Carlisle. That certainly will affect health, welfare, and safety of the Carlisle citizens. The Secretary McGinty, I believe, was out here either in our community or met with the Clean Air Board, and she said there's 13,000 trucks idling in Pennsylvania on a daily basis, 3,000 of them in our community, and there's only 72 of 800 parking space that are idle air equipped. Now, the flaws I see in all of this from a strategic perspective is that the focus really is on profit as the means to success. Everyone else seems to be either secondary or marginalized. There appears to be, in my judgment, and I've followed this for at least 2 years, and at least either daily or weekly, a hierarchical control over people. And what I mean by that is there's very limited oversight in these local communities, in these townships. And the only oversight that the townships have for any of their decision making is the citizens. They don't go to any legislature and get where they have to present briefings and people are asking questions of them. The lack of interest from elected officials changed, and I'm giving the sign here for 1 minute left. I believe that the governor needs to establish a task force to address the major issues. Let me move very quickly that winning, it's a winning versus losing game. The money and the powerful will rule, and I think that small townships are not qualified or prepared. And I'll give you one example. The one in Dickinson, it's a $220 million project, and the township did no cost-benefit analysis or economic impact, and they approved the plan in Dickinson Township. Added to that, something that was very strange, the developer was going to donate land for a park right in the middle of the industrial zone. So they're going to build a warehouse, they're going to have the diesel problems with all that, build some housing across the street, and then put a park in where kids can play and breathe. So there is a lack of social responsibility, in my judgment, and there's implications for business as well. And what I mean by that is that someday people are going to come together and realize that that there'll be a class action suit, and the trucking industry and the warehouse people are going to be up against a Aaron Brockovich someday, and I hope it's sooner rather than later. But I think we can get involved, work with the community and the school leaders, right as early and often as you possibly can. Remember, the other side gets a vote, and they have very deep pockets. My lawyer's suit comes off J.C. Penney's rack, and we're up against people with $1,500 Brooks Brothers suits and $400 Italian loafers. So it's a big deal for us. Let me close by saying a very short story here about imaginal cells, and if the moderator would just give me a minute just to talk about this. This is a chrysalis, and it's a hard-shelled pupa of a butterfly. It's protected in its development. The caterpillar's new cells are called these imaginal cells, and they're so totally different from caterpillar cells that the immune system thinks they're enemies because they're challenging it, and they gobble them up. But these new cells continue to appear, and more of them, pretty soon the whole caterpillar's immune system cannot destroy them fast enough. So what I'm trying to get here tonight is that when I look at imaginal cells, I'm looking at the audience here as imaginal citizens. And your roots, Dickinson College, Carlisle, is the roots of revolutionaries. That's what the Dickinson mission statement says. Benjamin Rush, John Dickinson, who signed the Constitution, and Charles Nesbitt, your first college president. So you're open to dialogue. You're open to challenge status quo. And that's what I'm asking you to do tonight, is to begin to challenge custom and to do something about this before it's too late. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Paul. Next is from the Office of Economic Development of Cumberland County, Omar Shute.
Well, thank you very much. I don't have a PowerPoint, so I can promise you that I won't have any technical problems today. That's the only thing I can promise you tonight. I am from Lima, Peru, and when they asked me about participating in this panel, I was very honored, but at the same time, I was really looking forward to it because coming from Lima, as you know, Lima is in Peru, in South America. And it's a very, very large city. It's about 8 million people. And we have some air quality problems there. I will not even imagine what the PM 2.5 is in Lima. I can tell you that a large number of my relatives suffer from asthma. And I've had bronchitis so many times I couldn't even tell you. But when I moved into Carlisle, I thought I was moving to the country because to me, compared to where I'm used to come, where I come from, you know, Carlisle is pretty nice air. But I did want to talk to you today about and just give you a perspective as far as what we're doing in planning, as far as what our planning office is doing, what we're doing in economic development. And also just give you a perspective of what we're doing as citizens, or what I think we should be doing as citizens, as concerned citizens that we are. As Paul was mentioning earlier, you know, that the traffic flow in I-81 is very heavy. We have about, the numbers that I have is 40 to 85,000 vehicles per day, and about 30% of that is trucking. Now, the number that we have to think about is that 90% of that tracking traffic is through traffic. So it's not traffic that actually stops here. And you know, whether we stop warehousing or not, we are still going to suffer from those problems. And that's, to me, that's it's good to approach it at a local level. But I think that this is an issue that we have to approach at a more regional level. I think it's an issue that we have as you know, the country has it, and also a global issue as well. As far as, you know, the warehousing industry, as far as planning, I think the warehousing boom, I can tell you that it's pretty much over in Cumberland County. There just isn't more land available. Basically, everything that you see now that is going to be developed, for the most part, I'm not going to say 100%, but for the most part is stuff that is already on the pipeline. Basically, you know, we are just running out of land. We don't have any more land that is zoned for that type of use, especially for the heavy volume of those monster warehouses that we've seen lately, you know, those 2 million square feet. warehouses. One of the anecdotes that I have, I went to a conference, and I was talking to some people in Philadelphia where they were bragging about having an 80,000 square feet warehouse. And you know, that in Cumberland County, that's pretty much a closet. You know, we do have some large warehouses here, and you know, the 81 corridor, I think, is undeniable. It's what drives in a big degree the northeast of the United States. You know, the traffic is going to increase, and by 2030, the traffic is going to go up to between 95 to 153,000 vehicles per day. So that's something that we have to pay very close attention to. Now, the Cumberland County Commissioners have taken a leadership role, which I really applaud, on involving other commissioners from other counties, you know, leaders from other states that are along the 81 corridor, so that they can work on, you know, trying to find a solution to the traffic that goes through 81 more effectively, because, you know, in the future, the traffic is going to be huge. And I guess it's just part of the development in Cumberland County that we see. We are a very good area to live, a very good area to do business. We have a very low unemployment rate, and the area is going to continue to grow. Out of the regional counties which go along 81, Franklin County, Dauphin, Cumberland, and Lebanon, Dauphin and Cumberland County are the counties that are definitely going to grow the most in the future. And we do have to be involved in shaping the future of our community. I think the Planning Commission has done a very good job through their comprehensive plan to make sure that the county is going to grow in an orderly fashion. But as I was saying earlier today, this is, as you know, the local municipalities have the ultimate power on what's going to happen. And as I said, as far as, at least as far as warehousing, I can very confidently say that, you know, the warehousing boom in Cumberland County is over. And I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago from that was written by Jack Shepley. He's from NAICIR, and he was predicting that right now the warehousing boom is actually moving to north of 81 and the east of I-78. So Cumberland County is not, you know, is not going to be growing anymore, as far as warehousing, which, as far as economic development, is good, because it allows us to diversify our economy. We do not want to be known as an area that just relies and depends very heavily in one industry, because, you know, Frank is here, Frank Ranking, and you know, you have to diversify. You know, you have to diversify your investments. You have to diversify the companies. You cannot put all your eggs in one basket, and that's one of the things that we're doing right now in economic development, is to diversify the industries that come into Cumberland County. Now it's undeniable, and I can tell you that you know, as far as the calls that I get from site selection companies that want to come into Cumberland County and want to expand or relocate businesses, 8 out of 10 calls that I get are from logistics and trucking companies. You know, that's just undeniable. We cannot escape our geography. I've heard all sorts of numbers as far as what I'm going to say next, but I've heard that the population that you can reach, at least, to put it conservatively, I guess 50% of the United States population within a 10-hour drive from here. So logistically, it makes sense for those companies to come here. And we do have a very good workforce, very experienced workforce as well. So that's undeniable. As far as economic development, we do not go out of our way to attract trucking companies into Cumberland County, or to attract warehousing companies into Cumberland County, nor does the state. Now, if you know, the state will treat very differently a company that is trying to go into Altoona, for example, and a company that is trying to come into Cumberland County, because we do have, as the panel was saying, an abundance of trucking and warehousing. And basically, when I get calls from real estate agents asking me, so what do you have to offer? I say, well, all I have to offer you is location. You know, if you want to come into the area, good for you, but first you're going to have to find a good site, and that is very difficult right now. Good luck finding a good site. So basically, we do not promote the area for warehousing and logistics, but again, our geography is undeniable. This is a good area for warehousing, and we just can't get away from that. I also wanted to talk to you about, you know, what we're doing as consumers. You know, the reason why we have so many warehouses, the reason why the trucking industry is so competitive and so abundant, is that we drive the industry. You know, it's consumer demand. We all want our products to be here. You know, when you go to Amazon or eBay, you want it to be overnight. You want everything to be delivered within 2 days. It's us. We drive the industry. If you want to stop the industry, which I hope you do not, but if you do want to stop the industry, you have to look yourself in the mirror first, and I do too, and change your consumer patterns, your buyer behavior. That is what drives the industry. Everybody does it for a profit, but really, it all lays on us. You know, it's our responsibility to change, and that's I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much.
Thomas, you've been a very patient man. Glad to present to you environmental attorney Thomas Hall.
Good evening. My name is Thomas Al. I've been an environmental attorney for 29 years. I recently began working with CAB on the air pollution problem in and around Carlisle. Dr. Carey has talked to you about the health effects of fine particulate. Remind you, there are two standards for fine particulate, a long-term exposure standard based on an annual average of 15 micrograms per cubic meter, and a short-term or acute standard, which the EPA recently changed last year to 35 micrograms per cubic meter. Now, why is that 35 micrograms so important? There are several reasons. Among them, that there were scientific and medical studies done between 1997 and 2005 would show that at the 35 microgram level for 24-hour exposures, you can expect increased respiratory symptoms, increased hospital admissions, increased heart failure, and increased mortality. And two of those studies were done in Pennsylvania. Now, these are the areas which have been presently designated as non-attainment for the PM2.5 standard in Pennsylvania. Note that the yellow areas are those Pennsylvania counties and metro areas which are non-attainment. The gray areas are the neighboring states or areas in neighboring states which are also non-attainment. That is, they're not meeting the federal health standards for fine particulate. And note that the basically the New York to Washington, D.C. corridor is almost exclusively non-attainment. Now, these are the on the map the three local PM2.5 monitoring stations in and around central Pennsylvania. There's one in Harrisburg on the yellow pushpin, one in York, and one in rural Adams County in Aaronsville. Carlisle sort of in the center of the map. Right now, we do not have in Carlisle a PM2.5 monitoring station. The Clean Air Board has requested DEP to put one in, and they will be putting one in near the College Street exit on Interstate 81. And then that will occur in May. Now, this table shows you what was recorded in terms of PM2.5 for the calendar year 2006. Stations are the Aaronsville Station, the Harrisburg Station, the York Station, and the far right column is the Susquehanna Air Quality Partnership forecast for air quality for that particular day. What I did was select those days in which the 35 microgram standard was violated and highlight that in red the air quality partnerships forecast is the one that's most frequently used on your TV broadcast when they're predicting air quality is good or moderate for the following day. Well, under the new EPA standard, the 35 microgram standard, there were about 27 days of unhealthy air quality, which should have been reported as unhealthy. Now, EPA just recently changed that standard in September, so I don't fault the Susquehanna Air Quality Partnership for their forecast, but it just goes to show you that the air quality is worse than we believe. A second point about this table is that many of the readings show violations of the 24-hour standard in Harrisburg and York, but not in Aaronsville. The Aaronsville site is a rural site, relatively free from urban emissions and highway emissions. As the air masses move up the valley, it will pick up highway and urban emissions, and that's why you would see violations in York and Harrisburg, but not in Aaronsville. I'll come back to this point in a bit. Under the Federal Clean Air Act, the state has an obligation to develop a state implementation plan to correct the violations of the national health standards. And these are called SIPs, and the SIPs are enforceable once they're developed as a matter of state law as well as federal law. And what the state implementation plan may contain are three items. They may contain limits on stationary sources, such as power plants, factories, boilers. Contain limits on emissions from mobile sources, such as cars and trucks. And can contain transportation control measures, such as limiting sulfur and fuel, auto inspections, high occupancy lanes. And all these things go into a state implementation plan. And the state has an obligation to submit that plan to EPA by 2008. Now, our fine particulate problem in this area is both a regional problem and a local problem. It's a regional problem because of the air masses that come up the East Coast. On those stagnant days, every place on the East Coast may be affected. And in those days, you would see violations of the 24-hour standard, not only in Harrisburg and York, but also in Aaronsville. And there's relatively little you can do about that. But on other days, you will see that the air is cleaner in the rural areas and dirtier in the urban areas. And that's a local problem. And And that's the contribution from highways, from truck stops, from warehouses and local industries impacting your air quality. Now, this map is done by a consultant for the DEP, and it shows potential fine particulate hotspots based on the roads traveled. And it's hard to see, but Cumberland County has 1.3 million truck miles driven every day. 1.3 million truck miles. On top of that, there are 2.1 million idling hours per year. So the combination of idling, truck travel, highway traffic makes the area around Carlisle a potential hotspot. So what can we do about this? One of the things that Jesse mentioned that's already been done is emission controls to some extent. Cars are generally well controlled, and in 2008, with new model cars, Pennsylvania will be adopting the California standards for new cars. As Jesse had also mentioned, starting with this year, the 2007 model heavy-duty trucks, there will be emission controls put on. But that doesn't control the problem for the existing fleet of diesel trucks. It will be 15 to 20 years before the old trucks are phased out and the new trucks are phased in. In addition, we don't have any idling restrictions in Pennsylvania, except for metropolitan Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. The Clean Air Board has petitioned the DEP to adopt a statewide anti-idling regulation. And the DEP has said if it's in favor of such a regulation, but it has not proposed one as yet. One other thing we can think about is dedicated truck routes, like routing truck traffic around and not into downtown Carlisle. Clean Air Board suggested a direct connection between Interstate 81 and the Turnpike so that the trucks don't necessarily have to go through the Miracle Mile. And we can look at, in the long term, moving some freight from highways onto rail. When the new state implementation plan is adopted, it will probably include tighter controls on power plants and boilers and industrial sources. But there are other things that you can do locally. One thing is local land use controls. The Municipalities Planning Act allows municipalities to get together and produce a joint comprehensive plan. You can get a group of municipalities together and the state will fund that kind of effort. You can decide, you know, where you want your new growth and then what kind of infrastructure you need to provide for that. One other thing you could do is for large development projects, you can ask for tree buffers. Trees are a very efficient way of reducing air pollution by filtering pollutants and also by absorbing them. And finally, in the long run, you might want to think about reforestation of open land. Urban forests have been proven to be very effective in reducing temperature, reducing air pollution, absorbing carbon, and reducing runoff from stormwater. There's a net benefit for the environment there. Now, your air quality problem didn't happen overnight, and these are not short-term measures, but you have to think in the long term what steps can be taken gradually to help your reduce air pollution locally. Thank you for your time.
I want to do two things. The first thing, environmentally,
is if we had a cardiologist here, and a pulmonologist may agree, stand up for a second and just change the blood in your body. You don't have to. This is voluntary, but I think we've been sitting for an hour. That's not always healthy. Okay, we do have a cardiologist at the top row. Maybe he wouldn't agree. Thank you very much.
Nobody faints.
Secondly, I think it's clear that all five of our presenters are passionate about what they had to say on behalf of all of us, and they were truly constrained to do this within 600 seconds. And I want to thank them, and I know you want to thank them, for their work tonight. Now it's your turn. We've got a couple of students who are prepared. One student. Okay, there you go. Okay. Who are prepared to get to you very quickly without falling down the steps. And we would ask that you wait till they get there. And then the other rule, as you know, I'd like you to ask a question and not make a speech. Who will be first? Over here, please. Thank you.
I'll try and help you with that one. The thing is, when I drive through the Cumberland Valley, especially the Miracle Mile, on an lightly overcast morning, and it's 30 degrees out and there's a lot of trucks idling at truck stops, I don't think there's any question that particulate matter in that exhaust is just hanging like a cloud over Middlesex Township. I think, I will tell you this, the trucks running on the interstate system going 60 mile an hour, whatever they may be doing, are operating about 100 times more efficient while they're pulling and working hard and burning all that fuel and no waste than they are when they're idling. There's a lot more wasted fuel and a lot more particulate matter and exhaust, am I correct, Doug, when they're idling versus when they're working hard going down the road. So it's my opinion that we really need to tackle idling and find ways to reduce idling within the Cumberland Valley.
Thank you. Anyone else care to comment on that? Question from this side of the house.
During the last presentation, did I hear correctly that there's not a monitoring station in Carlisle or anywhere in Cumberland County? And if so, how do we know how bad the problem really is? I mean, our data could be better than Harrisburg or worse than what's measured in Harrisburg. How do we know?
Tom, would you like to?
Okay, yes. There is a monitoring station which is operated by EPA up by Carlisle Springs, but we don't have ready access to that data. That's partly why the Clean Air Board asked for a monitoring station in a residential area near Interstate 81 so we would know what the local air quality is, the air that people breathe here. I can tell you that I did see some data from that Carlisle Springs station for 2005, and it showed that the air quality on long-term average was above the 15 micrograms per cubic meter.
And correct me if I'm wrong, we also want to put that in a place that isn't on the Miracle Mile, where we have a sense that pollution is particularly heavy, but more in a residential area so that we have a better sense of what impact
that is. I understand that station's going in on Walnut Street, about a half mile from Interstate 81 in a residential area.
The other thing I'd add to that is that that's one data point, is the PM 2.5. And I think if you begin to talk to the medical community, and Phil, you could help me out, and when you begin to look at the number of patients that doctors are seeing, not only locally but throughout the Cumberland County, relative to pulmonary issues, that you begin to start putting two and two together. So it's not just the PM 2.5, but the other causative factors as well.
Question over here. There was a hand over here before.
Hi. Mr. Keene, I really appreciated your concern and your progressive thinking for a trucking company. I'm impressed because most of the trucking company presidents live in caves, and you're a remarkably good, high-quality representative of progressive thinking, so I appreciate your presentation. In dealing with the volume of traffic and the dust and particulate emissions from it, we can stop some emissions by getting rid of the Miracle Mile interchange and directly transferring traffic to 78 and 81 without all the inner movements, but we are still a transportation nexus. To reduce overall particulates, we can stop the traffic, we can change the modes, or we can reroute it. Stopping the traffic means New York starves. That's not a choice.
Rail, I appreciate your comments, but I would like a question, please.
I'm about to hit it.
Thank you.
How would making 81, 78, and 80 toll roads impact this? We're about to get the opportunity with the turnpike. Should we expand that opportunity?
Anybody want to take on PennDOT on this one?
Well, I will. I personally believe we owe it to ourselves as citizens of Pennsylvania to take a look at offering private industry the chance to run a Pennsylvania toll road. I think it needs control properly. I think private industry has proved they can operate more economically and cheaper, more efficiently than the state government does as a general rule. As far as Interstate 81, or Interstate 80 making them toll roads, that's a decision Pennsylvania has to make. Virginia looked at it. If you make them toll roads, it's not going to change the amount of truck traffic. Trucking companies won't have any, they can't go around, they can't, they're not going to get down through Virginia and over to Maryland and back up. It wouldn't make economic sense to do that in the time they have. They will pay the tolls, and they will pass the toll on to the people shipping the product, and the consumer will pay that toll in the end.
Thank you. Question from the center part.
Thank you. Question is, the focus on this event has been directed at the trucking industry and has been for quite some time. It's my understanding that there are other pollutants and other industry groups that are contributing to this problem, i.e. the busing industry. That is a problem. Can anybody on the panel address what they know about the busing industry, the buses, and the lack of regulation on the buses? And what can we do to also, if there isn't regulation, to bring them into some level of regulation so that it's not solely Jesse and his group and his industry sector that's dealing with the problem?
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead. I can answer the question in that buses fall under the same guidelines as Class 8 tractor trailers They actually fall under more stringent requirements that this in 2007-2010. Medium-duty emission requirements are even stricter. I think the biggest thing you can do for the local bus, school bus industry, you know, and CAT and those type things is to fund the money to buy newer 2007-2000, replace the bus fleets earlier with these vehicles that meet the more stringent requirements. There are also aftermarket treatments, particulate traps you can add. They cost anywhere from $7,000 to $10,000 to install. I've heard lower numbers, but anyhow, you know, the money could also be funded to retrofit some of the older buses with those. I think there is an awful lot you can do with the school bus, and I think CAT's already working towards propane-powered engines and those type of things, and battery-powered as well. So there's a lot you can do there pretty quick if you're willing to pay, I believe.
Yeah, and speaking for the Clean Air Board, the proposed regulation that the Clean Air Board suggested would apply equally to diesel-powered buses as well as diesel-powered trucks.
Thank you.
Yes, Pennsylvania also makes available to school districts monies to retrofit buses. So, but the school districts have to specifically know about this and apply for it.
And we'll add that to this school bus. Up there, please.
Are there any sort of regulations surrounding the idle air, or is that a completely voluntary thing by the gas stations or the trucking companies, or like how are those put in and who decides who to put them in or where?
Questions about idle air.
Idle Air is a publicly traded company, you know, on the stock market. They're investing money installing them where they think they will be used a lot. They started primarily in the Southwest, in the South, where trucks would run idle because of air conditioning more. And they're adding them around the country. But there's no mandate that you use them. It's up to the trucking company or the owner of the truck whether he wants to save fuel, save engine time, and use idle air.
Thank you. We had some questions up here.
I have a question along those lines. On a national and state level, there's often discussions of using market or tax incentives to integrate newer technologies such as idle air or to retire old technologies to accelerate that process. Is there any precedent for doing that in the trucking industry to somewhat make that process go a little bit faster?
The trucking industry has suggested that there should be tax incentives. But as I said during my presentation, a truck that I bought in December and the one I bought in January cost me $10,000 more. So there's no incentive for me really to buy that January truck. The other thing, the government so far has not stepped in. And what may change that is truck production is off about 70% right now. They had three great years, built a lot of trucks. Records in history, it's called pre-buy. Buy before the truck went up $10,000. So if the government came in and gave incentives to reduce that price, a tax credit of some type, you would see a lot more new 2007 compliant trucks being bought. The other thing is, an APU, alternative power source to install on a truck between $5,000 and $7,000, they actually, when we install one on a truck, we have to pay the government 12% on top of that federal excise tax because we're adding it as part of the truck. So again, there's no incentive for that.
Any questions in the center section? There's one here.
I'm seeing that, I guess you talk about, I'm looking at the PowerPoint, about dedicated truck routes. And so, and Mr. Keenan mentioned about how trucks are more efficient when they stay on the highway. So that brings me to the conclusion that it makes a lot more sense for a truck not to be getting off 81 and taking Route 34 to 15. So I guess as members of these communities, as members of Carlisle, or community members in Carlisle, or Mount Holly Springs, or in Gardner's, along these two-lane roads where the trucks are getting off and they're having to stop at red lights and they're sitting there idling and then they're pulling out again, what can we do to eliminate this truck traffic through the communities so that diesel emissions aren't being, you know, spewed into the air while we're, you know, sitting outside with our families on our decks, you know, having dinner?
Trucks through the local, on the local roads, question.
I know very few reasons why a truck should be coming through the town of Carlisle. There should probably be some restrictions for local deliveries only. I don't understand why a trucker needs to get off the turnpike, going to Ernstville, to Nouse Foods, and drive through Carlisle. He can easily go on 81, drive around Carlisle, and get off, and then go towards Ernstville. No reason for him to go through Carlisle, other than if he's delivering to a restaurant in Carlisle or dumping stone in somebody's new driveway or something. I see very little reason other than pure local deliveries why trucks should be on Carlisle streets, to be honest. I wouldn't want mine there, to be honest with you.
And the borough of Carlisle does have ordinances which restrict tractor-trailer traffic on borough streets.
And the borough also, within the last 4 weeks, had an open hearing on this in the Quality of Life Committee, and this is a continuing topic. Next question, over there.
What, if anything, is being done by the diesel engine industry to eliminate the problem at the source?
Well, we had major reductions in exhaust emissions, both NOx and particulate matter, in 2004, again in 2007, and a major one in 2010. In 2010, I am told that a truck will put out cleaner air out the exhaust than it takes in within one of these containment areas, for example, Carlisle, Pennsylvania. That's how filtered it will be when it comes out the exhaust in 2010. The other thing is the industry is working, the trucking industry, truck manufacturers, are very challenged to develop trucks that run at least part of the time on batteries, especially for parcel delivery vans, local delivery type equipment, and so on. Walmart has challenged the truck manufacturers to improve fuel economy, you know, which less fuel you burn, less it emits, to produce tractor trailers that will get 17 miles a gallon by, I believe it's 2011. So the industry is being challenged, and I think they're reacting. One other thing I'll say real quick. The industry, what I think we'll buy in 2 years is a new truck with the compliant engine in it and some type of auxiliary battery system to support air conditioning and heating for up to 10 hours during a break period. That's what truckers have challenged the truck manufacturers to do, and they are reacting at this point. I think we're about 2 years away from that. But then there won't be a need for an APU even. It will be running off batteries during a rest period.
Thank you. Question from this section?
Thank you. I was curious as to whether there are any studies by the Pennsylvania Department of Health regarding the health consequences of these areas, these counties that have higher than the standard pollution counts that we've been talking about. You mentioned health concerns, but I wondered if there are any actual studies that show the impact.
The Pennsylvania Department Department of Health has data that shows that mortality from asthma in Cumberland County is higher than other counties in Pennsylvania. And the National Cancer Institute recently provided evidence that the prevalence of lung cancer in women in Cumberland County is higher than the national average. So those are two sources of evidence that support the health claims.
Thank you. Our 10th question will be our second last. This section here, center section.
One of the things that's come up is the fact of the lower sulfur fuel, which should greatly reduce the PM2.5. Lower sulfur requirements in the past, both with cars and with coal-burning power plants, have resulted in much lower pollution levels. I had heard you had another talk where you mentioned the difference between the sulfur level under the new ultra low sulfur levels for diesel fuel as compared to heating oil.
I don't remember the exact specifics. Up until September, Nationwide was running on low sulfur fuel. September, October, we had to go to ultra low sulfur fuel. That's basically all you can buy now, and that's what everybody's running. So that's kind of a plus that the government mandated that we haven't even discussed, really. I mean, everybody went to that. That's really all it's being supplied. Few people are still making the low sulfur, but you know, it won't be for long because it doesn't make sense to make it anymore. You're only going to stock one fuel. You can't have different pumps and stuff. So the truck stops are basically all selling ultra low sulfur.
Down here for our final question, or over there for our final question. Power of the microphone.
Okay. I had a question about Mr. Keene on biodiesel. You had said that you guys were implementing some sort of biodiesel plant or something like that. I was just wondering, for your energy future, where alternative fuels lie in there for your fleet, if they do.
Well, currently we do run biodiesel. There's a plant down in Charmanstown. Race Miner is the owner. He's on the Clean Air Board. He's selling all he can make right here in Cumberland County. Most companies are adding up to 5% biodiesel. There gets to be some issues with truck diesel engines, and the engine manufacturers will not warranty your engine if you burn more than 5% currently. That technology is continuing to change. But right now, the engine manufacturer, when you buy a new truck, is telling you not to run more than 5% biodiesel. So, as that technology changes, they become more comfortable with running higher levels of it. John Glime, a local contractor working machines in the dirt, is running 100% biodiesel. And, you know, we'll all see how it works out for him. But so far, John's had good success with it.
Thank you. I promised a question over here, and so that was the penultimate question.
This is a planning question for Mr. Shute. Looking at the maps and watching the increased number of warehouses over time, it's obvious that we have an antiquated government system that has created part of this problem. Dickinson Township has a couple warehouses. North Middleton Township has a couple warehouses. By the time you're done, you have a huge cluster of warehouses, but each individual township didn't create it. And what is the county doing, or in a proactive way, to actively encourage and use the bully pulpit, at least, to for regional planning, not just township planning? Because the government, local government system has gotten us partly into this problem.
Well, you're right. The boom basically caught the municipalities off guard. And by the time they realized, it was a little too late. But the Cumberland County Planning Commission basically serves on an advisory role to the municipalities. And there is a comprehensive plan that the municipalities have adopted, and they use that as a reference to manage growth. But as you know, this is Pennsylvania, and the ultimate decision-making as far as you know, zoning ordinances and why not rest in the municipality. And all that the Planning Commission can do is just basically serve an advisory capacity.
But the important point is regionalism, and we still have yet to think regionally in many, many ways. Thank you for asking that question. Thank you all. I know Missy Lafferty has a couple of other things to do here tonight. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Rusty and the other panelists. On behalf of the Clark Center, I would like to present them with a plaque.
See the very nice poster on this. This is a miniature, and the Clark Center students as well as staff work very hard on promoting their events, and this is a very nice memento. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all of you for attending one more time, and I'd just like to remind you that following tonight's event, there's a discussion here immediately after this. So have a good evening.
Thank you.